that rebellious 51st state of Canada, that Governor Trudeau is in big trouble. He needs to really get in line or he's going to face some serious consequences.
No Melania for him. No Melania for him if he doesn't toe the line.
Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened.
There is not a liberal America and a conservative America. There is the United States of America.
Good night and good luck.
Hey, folks, it's Rick Wilson, your host, as always, on the Lincoln Project podcast, and I am joined today by a very special guest, my friend George Conway.
Co-conspirator.
Hey, co-conspirator. George and I will be residing soon in a beautiful sunny bungalow in Gitmo. No.
I've arranged for us to fly down to Mar-a-Lago to kiss the ring.
Oh, well, that should be exciting.
And I bought us both. I bought 4,000 copies of Cash Patel's children's book.
His fairy tale book?
In the hope that he will show us some leniency. And I've scheduled a meeting with him so we can really talk through
issues.
Our issues and how and see how we can – what we can do to help and what information we can provide about other people
sure.
who have conspired against Donald Trump and, by calling him out as a criminal and stuff like that, and which we are no longer going to do since we are
I'm never going to refer to Donald.
We are obeying in advance.
I'm never going to call Donald Trump a psychopath again.
Oh, I mean, never. No,
he that is would be wrong.
Stable. He is a stable genius.
And you know what? It's very legal and cool.
He is going to be the best president ever. Eggs will be free. Eggs will be absolutely free. We will be swimming in eggs.
You won't even believe how many eggs you have.
All the free eggs that we get, people will be tossing them at us on the street. We will be covered in yolk. In a matter of weeks.
And you know how we'll get there, George? We won't take those damn electric vehicles. We'll be using our free gas as well.
Yes, our free gas, which we're going to get after we invade Canada. And
the 51st state has rebelled too long.
Syria is now for the taking. I mean, you remember Trump said about, I think it was Iraq, like, why don't we just take all the oil? Well, actually, I don't think Syria has that much
oil. Syria's not that great for oil,
But Putin will give us some in exchange for surrendering all of Europe.
Well, and just giving up NATO will let us focus.
Drill, baby. It doesn't matter whether it's economical or not. And fuck all those windmills.
You know, they just kill birds, George. That's all they're here for. They're just here to kill birds. But, I mean, that rebellious 51st state of Canada, that Governor Trudeau is in big trouble. He needs to really get in line or he's going to face some serious consequences.
No Melania for him. No Melania for him if he doesn't toe the line.
You know, that whole old rumor that Justin Trudeau was actually Fidel Castro's son when Pierre Trudeau's wife had an affair with Castro.
She was
a busy girl, but it would in some
Very
rumors
gorgeous. Make – I remember from the 70s. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
But it would in some rumors
– Are you being politically incorrect now?
Always. Yeah. Okay. But it would in some rumors make Barron the grandson of Fidel Castro.
Interesting. So was Fidel sending us his best or not?
I think Fidel has had no best by the time he shuffled off this mortal coil.
Yeah.
But you mentioned Cash Patel earlier, and I think – you and I both know that Donald Trump hasn't changed a bit. He is still crazy. He is still riddled with dementia. He is still going downhill. And Correct. So all the sideshow that we're seeing now in the beginning and all the usual posturing of, he's going to put in all these people, the Cash Patels, the RFKs, the Pete Hegseths, all the crazies, all of that really is going to be background noise, I think, as Trump starts to decline further once he's in office.
I agree, although there are going to – the other thing that I think we're going to see a lot of, first of all, no one can tell him to shut his trap. Right now, he's enjoying himself. He's actually – now, let's leave aside the merits of some of these people that he's appointed from RFK, a true conservative RFK, and Hegseth and Tulsi and Gates and all of these things. I mean, let's just set that aside. He's been on his best behavior.
He really has.
And this was also true, as you may recall, during the transition period.
Oh, yes.
In 2016 and 2017.
That is correct.
Because he is in his glory, right? He is at his own residence. Last time it was Trump Tower. This time it's Mar-a-Lago. Mm-hmm. And people are coming to kiss the ring. And right. He is now has the added benefit of realizing that he's not about to go to a federal or state prison anytime soon.
Right.
So he is right now as fulfilled as a needy and insecure, malignant narcissist can be at any given moment.
Right.
And people are not, you know, he's the subject of some criticism, but it's, you know, this is just the period of time, the interregnum, where it's just hard to gin up the energy to go hammer and tong at him because, frankly, he hasn't actually done anything yet. He's in the process of preparing to do bad things, and you can sort of see how the bad things are going to escalate. But it's not necessarily the most productive activity to go out there hammer and tong and saying, this is the end of the world, it's the end of the world, it's the end of the world, because it's a little early.
Right.
And I think that's sort of part of the problem with why people tuned out a lot of the criticism in 2017, sure. 2018 about Trump is because, as one reporter who, you know, an investigative reporter who put it to me, is just like, you know, we turned up the volume too much on everything. And it becomes but that's also how Trump works. I mean, you know, flood the zone with shit and it's everybody's used to. But so, you know, there will be plenty of time when things actually go south, as they will, to point that out and say, well, see, we told you about this. Right. And that's sort of how that's done is really that's where you and Stu and others are going to be masterful at. And I have some suggestions, actually. But
we will have that conversation. But I mean, I think it's important for people. Yes, he is an evil force in the world. He's a malignant narcissist and he is in command of this party and this machine right now. But his own flaws are generally Trump's undoing in things.
Correct. They are generally he does the worst and he causes the most damage to himself when he thinks he's riding high.
Right.
Okay. There are two things that cause him. I mean, one of the reasons why he is under the DSM. Has two personality disorders. Is that the personality disorder, narcissism, sociopathy? You have those personality disorders have to cause distress in oneself or trouble for oneself. In other words, it makes you less functional than you otherwise might be. And some people say, "Well, but he's president of the United States. He got elected twice. He's got all this money." And you know, I mean, not that he actually lost a lot of money, but. You know, this guy should not have gotten indicted, not because he didn't commit a crime, but those are things – he did all those things to himself unnecessarily.
Right.
Right? There was no need to take those classified documents. The guy doesn't even read. Okay? Right.
He can barely – yeah, he's barely literate.
There was no – paying off the porn star, it's like he already – he was – it was the dumbest thing ever.
Because right. It wasn't like he was worried about Melania's feelings.
Right. You know, and the whole crazy January 6th thing, it's like this guy could have gone out. He was going to go out no matter what. And it was a total long shot. If he had just calmed down and acted dignified, he would, you know, he wouldn't have been in the doghouse for 4 years. He wouldn't have been deplatformed. Actually, it turned out the fact that he was deplatformed oddly helped him because people forgot how fucking crazy he is.
Yep.
But, you know, there's just so many ways in which he is self-destructive. I mean, the whole Russia investigation, there was nothing that he personally had done in contacting the Russians during the 2016 campaign. Let's leave apart whether there's a tape or whether, you know, his business dealings and whether or not there's a history there, whether or not there's compromise by the way. But, you know, he made that investigation all about himself by trying to obstruct it. And so, you know, he is self-destructive, and there are two circumstances where he does the most damage to himself. One is when he's being criticized. You know, you can he's so easily triggered, as you and I know. but there are times when he feels like he's on top of the world. That's when he makes his biggest mistakes. For example, in 2019, after he was – 2019, after he was totally exonerated, by the Mueller report and acquitted at the impeachment trial in 2020, those were the times when he thought, you know, in 2019, he gets acquitted, he basically, the Mueller report comes out as a win for him because Barr lies.
Barr takes it, yeah.
And then that's when he has his call with Zelensky gets himself into the next piece of trouble. And then in 2020, you know, after the acquittal, in January or February, he then goes, he thinks he's on top of the world, and he starts seeking vengeance. And then he thinks, you know, then COVID hits and he tries to avoid it, but then he pretends like he knows what he's doing and that you know, he understands it all and he's in charge of it, and he fucks that up. So to the point where the White House had to persuade him, his staff had to persuade him, we can't have you on TV anymore, right? After the debacle of shining a light up people's asses or whatever the hell he said. And injecting Clorox.
Right.
So he, you know, so when he's under pressure or when he's flying high, and a lot of places in between, but those are the two things that sort of will trigger him. And right now he's in the process of flying high. He's going to come in flying high and he's going to overreach. And then people are going to criticize him, and then he's going to go batshit. And we're gonna see the whole cycle again. He's got completely the wrong – I mean, look, he's dumb as fuck. But he's got the completely wrong temperament to be in charge of anything that – you know, about president of the United States, because you're going to get criticized as president of the United States no matter what.
No matter who you are or what you do.
You are. You could be the perfect president. And, you know, shit's going to happen, and you're going to get blamed for it. Yep. And with him – he does stuff that he ought to be blamed for. And then it is a never-ending cycle. He gets more angry. And now I think he's got less self-control than ever. Although right now he is conceitedly behaving himself, but that's because everybody's kissing his ass.
Right.
This is going to be much, much worse. And there's nobody to push back on him. There's going to be no – even weak Reince Priebus push back on him. And there's not going to be Chief of Staff John Kelly bringing in books written by shrinks about Trump's mental illnesses to try to figure out how to work him.
Right.
Everybody's just going to say, well, boss, maybe you shouldn't do that. And he's going to say – and then somebody else is going to say, no, do it.
Do it.
And then everybody's going to say, oh, well, that's just Trump being Trump. And it's, you know, and nobody's going to hide shit from him the way – Cohn from Gordon, the fellow from Goldman Sachs,
Gary Cohn,
Gary Cohn, and you know, it's going to be such a tremendous shit show that it will be entertaining. I mean, bad for the country. It's not going to adversely affect me because I don't even know what the price of eggs are, and he's going to cut my taxes. But all those people out there who voted for him who are concerned about the price of eggs. I mean, he even said the other day, it's the first truthful thing he said alone. He doesn't know anything about groceries.
Right. And the admission, that admission fascinates me because as we do all the post hoc data analysis, man, inflation really hurt Harris a lot more than when it was initially modeled. That really was a driver. And now him saying
– To me, that's just a shocking thing because I'm old. I don't know that you're as old as I am, but I'm old enough to remember – the 1970s.
Me too.
You know, I remember when gasoline was 38 and a half cents a gallon.
Yep.
And then a year later, it was 65 cents a gallon. And then it was three digits. And then you had to wait in gas lines where you wait in gas lines and you could only get gas depending on what the last digit of your license plate yep. said.
Odd or even days.
You know, those were bad times. And then we had two recessions in a row caused by, Jimmy Carter actually doing the one thing that a president has really done to help the economy over the long run, appointing Paul Volcker as chairman of the Federal Reserve,
correct.
Which triggered two brutal recessions that finally squeezed inflation out of the economy. And we basically had, with a couple of bumps here and there, like the 2008, we've basically had
low 30 inflation years.
Ever. Yeah. Yes, we have 30 years of basically continual growth with low inflation. And it's really, you know, why? And I know people who say, well, you don't understand the people you are, you know, you're too wealthy.
You're elite.
You're an elite. You don't understand. People are struggling and suffering out there. And I don't deny that they may feel they are, but there is, I live in this country. I've driven through, you know, the South Bronx is like, you know, there's, you drive through New York, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember New York in the 70s.
Sure.
It was scary. Scary. Now it's like, I don't think it's scary to walk down Bed-Stuy except maybe at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's just weird. And I think it's just, well, anyway, I'm rambling.
Nah, but listen, I think we underscored that. And I think the fact that's just one of a million things that Trump will not be able to deliver on that his people really, really wanted him to do. What do you think the worst broken promise for the Trump base, for his fans, is going to be at the end of this?
I think he's not going to be able to address the immigration issue as well as he thinks. First of all, I don't think the federal government, I don't think they can ramp up enforcement in an sufficiently efficient and a manner that they can actually, they can put on some shows, but they will be chaotic and we're going to end up with, you know, kids in cages again, and it's not going to work out very well because people then see right. that and they're repulsed by it. Even, you know, and then, you know, they're still going to, people, the only thing he may be able to accomplish is he may turn the country into such a shit show that people will be leaving instead of coming again. Okay, that's the, you know, the irony is that people get all upset about immigration. And the reason why people want to come here legally and illegally mm-hmm. is because of the traditional values of our country that involve, you know, that basically involve freedom.
Rule of law.
Want, the rule of law. There's it's peaceful, generally speaking,
mm-hmm.
and you know, and because of all those things, that stability leads to prosperity. And we, you know, we may not be technically or the exact most prosperous country in the world, but the level of prosperity that we have compared to basically right. any group, randomly selected group of human beings in the history of Homo sapiens. I mean, we're in the 95th, 96th, 97th percentile.
Easily,
collectively, right?
Right.
So you know, it we live in very, very strange times where people just. I think it's just that people. I mean, there's the Tom Nichols theory that people are bored. There's the income inequality theory where people look and see other people doing better than they, and they don't understand why. There's a fact that people don't save enough and they spend everything they have and then they feel pressured financially. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of different things here that I think. And then there's just also we live lives that are people need to basically feel aggrieved about something every so often. But the problem is this sense of grievance, you know, which raises dopamine levels, I think, in people's mm-hmm. brains. You know, leads them to do destructive things, and then what happens is people have to learn the hard way that mm-hmm. that that maybe things weren't as bad off as they were. And, you know, hopefully it doesn't end up like Germany in 1945.
You know, one of the things I think we know that Trump is assembling this team of suck-ups and sycophants and people who are unquestionably unqualified, but unquestionably much more loyal and obedient than the first administration. There's no Tillersons or Mattises or Cones who are going to try to play games in the background. I was going to ask you about this. Who are you watching as the rising MAGA star? Because, I mean, the real talk here is Donald Trump is a lame duck already. Who do you think in this administration is going to try to – is going to try to become the next Trump, the next star from their perch in the cabinet or in the government?
Well, I think that whoever is that person has to be very careful. Because if Trump perceives – that somebody is too ambitious, his instinct will be to tamp them down. You know, I mean, like, I guess, I mean, the reason why I think Mike Pompeo is no longer with us,
right,
is in part because, I mean, there were these what would have been viewed by Trump as shenanigans during the post-election period in 2020, where he was talking to people about the 25th Amendment, but also, you know, Pompeo just oozed ambition.
Ambition.
And that's why I don't think he's there anymore. Trump doesn't mind people who are ambitious as long as he views them as subservient to him. And that is how, that is how J.D. Vance is about to become vice president of the United States.
Right.
Now, that's a good question. Let me think of which of the characters do I think has the most ambition to be the heir apparent? I think that's the question you're asking, right?
Yep.
Well, obviously Vance. And I think Vance's strength is that he will know how to keep a low profile. And keep the boss happy in that regard. And he's already doing that. I don't know. I mean, I assume that's partly voluntary and intentional, because I think he is canny in the ways of manipulating a narcissistic sociopath. I also, you know, it is also something that maybe Trump is doing. I don't know. But you know, obviously, he's somebody who we need to look out for, but he's going to be quiet. And I, you know, at the end of the day, I do not know, although he did do reasonably well spouting out lies in a semi-convincing manner against Tim Walz, I don't think he really has the charm or the charisma at the end of the day
to
pull it off. The other people who
I think that's right.
People who are ambitious, you know, it is really, really hard to say. Hegseth, if he can stay sober, I don't know. I just don't think he has the confidence.
You think he's going to make it?
Yes, I do. I think he's not the worst pick. And that I'm not saying he's a good pick at all, but I think the Pentagon brass will be able to handle him. You know, they just keep the bar in his office well stocked, take him on a tour of the officers' clubs throughout the world to see if they're well stocked. I mean, I bet this is an interesting thing. Maybe some reader can look this some viewer can look this up. I'll bet the Department of Defense is the largest purchaser of alcohol, except for maybe the Russian Defense Ministry, in the world, because it's got the biggest employee. It's got these PXs, we don't have a drunken force the way the Russians do, but it's a, you know, this is the biggest employer in the country, or if not on the planet. And, you know, it has its own stores and bars, and it's just like it's its own little world. So it's probably one of the biggest purchasers of alcohol in the world. And, you know, Hegseth is qualified for that. Who else can we talk about?
Okay. Well, look, I think the one that I'm hearing from the Senate guys that they will go to the mattresses to stop is Tulsi Gabbard. That's good. Hard even for Trump to lean on them. He's getting pushback from what I'm hearing that she's the one that they are like, this is the red line, boss. We're not going to go public about it with you, but you need to do the right thing here. I'm curious if that. I don't know how the process
is. Will he go to the mat? He seems to be willing to expend political capital. He didn't seem to be willing to expend political capital on Matt Gaetz. He is willing to expend political capital on Hegseth, which at first we weren't sure he was going to do, but he started doing it. And he's definitely going to expend political capital on Cash Patel because he's a central part of the program.
Oh, he needs cash. He needs cash for –
because we absolutely want – He absolutely wants to turn the Federal Bureau of Investigation into the Federal Bureau of Retribution.
Absolutely.
That is the most important thing to Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
But looking at all the other people, I do not see, other than Vance, I do not see who the next person is. There isn't a lot of talent.
No,
the Republican stable. That's the thing. I mean, they have managed to basically deter good and talented people from joining. I mean, they're basically rotting the Republican Party because good people won't do it. They know better. It's just not worth it to them. They may not decide for their own reasons and because it's just easier to go through life that way. They're not going to go out there and bang the drums the way you and I have.
Right.
Because they ultimately they don't want to harm their businesses. Their fear of physical retribution. It's just not worth anyone, individual's person to do that. But I do not – honestly, I don't see who the next person would be, and
I've been thinking about it a lot lately, and while there's like a little bit of dynastic whatever in Trump's head, he hates his own kids. Yeah. So Don Jr. is too effed up to do it, I think.
Correct.
Eric's too slow, and Ivanka dumb. Hasn't – you know,
Ivanka come back. Has checked out, I think.
Yeah. She hasn't come back into daddy's orbit completely, although I do hear Jared Kushner's floating around again.
Yeah.
Because he needs another cash infusion from his friends in Saudi Arabia. But,
that's absolutely right about Jared is he cannot divorce himself from this administration because this is part of
– It's his business model.
It's his business. It's what he – that's how he got $2 billion from MBS.
Yeah. And I think he's going to get a surprising number of the folks in the Senate who all think they're the future. Yeah, the Josh Hawleys, the Tom Cottons, all those people. I suspect they're going to end up being basically like Rick Perry. You know, they'll have a specific little group that thinks that they're the next thing since next best thing since sliced bread, and fall short when it comes down to trying to capture the MAGA base in 2028.
Yeah, and it's going to be a very difficult play because one of the possible courses of events is that the anti-incumbentism that we have been seeing over the past several years will continue in 2022 and then – 2026 and then 2028. And that's going to be rough on them because they are going to be – because everybody's going to be in lockstep and they control basically the entire government. And it's going to be very difficult, though they will absolutely try to blame other people for it. Okay, they will look for
no question.
One of the things that narcissists do generally, malignant narcissists especially, authoritarians do, and autocrats do, is they look for a scapegoat, someone to blame for their own fault, faultiness. And I think that's got to be the focus of what. People who are on the outside, and I can't imagine. I mean, that's what the Lincoln Project. I would bet my bottom dollar will be doing is saying, "See, this is his. He did this. He's got no excuse." And juxtaposing that to the other thing that we're going to see, and we haven't touched upon this, and I keep beating. This is the drum I'm beating now. Is watch for the corruption.
Watch oh, it's going to be outstanding.
It's going to be outstanding because basically that's why these people are in the game. Most of them, virtually none of them have principles.
No.
Other than maybe a nihilistic urge to destroy anything and everything.
Right.
The other thing they want is money. It's all about the grift. It's all about, sure. Hey, I'm, you know, it's there. Boris Epstein was just simply being more direct and honest about.
Yeah. He just
holding up for money, but basically
put it down on paper.
I know people are going around town, former Trump staffers are going around town basically saying, I can help you get you plead your case before Donald Trump and I can explain him to you.
Mm-hmm.
And in a much, you know, which is less mob bossish than what Epstein is doing, right. But frankly of the same ilk. And, you know, the corruption is going, and there's going to be a belief that the Justice Department will not do anything to these people. And I think that's going to be correct. You could have the ProPublica or the New York Times come out with a play for pay scandal of immense proportions.
Right. Briefcases full of cash. Right.
Yeah. No, briefcases full of cash to purchase Trump sneakers in exchange for an ambassadorship.
Right.
And the odds of any investigation of that occurring is going to be basically no higher than the odds that Bill Barr was going to investigate the extortion of Ukraine by the president of the United States in connection with the illegal withholding of authorized funds to an ally. So, we're going to see that, and it's going to be brazen. And there's not going to necessarily result in prosecutions, except to the extent that there may be overlapping state law issues, like what Bannon has in New York. But mostly, it will not. They will not have a fear of investigation either by Congress or by the DOJ, and it's going to be up to journalists to report these facts, and they will be able to report these facts because, as what happened with Boris shows. They like to tell on each other because they're all jealous of each other and they all want to knife each other in the back because these are the people who are attracted to working for a malignant narcissist. They have no loyalty themselves other than what serves their own interests. We're going to know a lot about all the craziness that's going on, and it's going to be up to the press to report it. But people using the channels of communication that are no longer, linear television is dead, we know. But people, like the Lincoln Project putting out TikToks explaining, kind of like, is it like what Navalny did with the big Sochi?
Sure.
Sochi, what was it in Sochi?
Sochi, the Olympics.
Sochi. Yeah, the big, big palace that.
That Putin built.
Had built. And contrast that, I think, Elon is going to be great fodder for all of this.
I was just contrast about to bring that up.
With the fact that, let's go into the Safeway. Oh, look at the price of eggs.
Yeah. Elon and got a tax
that
cut.
I'm going to still bang the drums about democracy and authoritarianism and psychopaths. But I think at the end of the day, it's going to be more effective given what happened, especially as demonstrated by what happened in 2024, to basically say, you guys were conned. Now, you can't put it that way because people don't like to admit that they were conned. But
basically, I think the way you phrase it is he didn't deliver for you.
He didn't deliver for you, but he delivered for these people
instead. Elon got a tax cut. Elon got more government contracts. We ran an ad the other day saying that they're going to give George Soros a tax cut.
Yeah.
And I had a MAGA guy freak out on me in my DMs. He's like, that's not true. He's not giving Soros a tax cut. I'm like, oh, yes, he is.
Yes, he's going to get a tax cut.
He's going to get a tax cut. Hollywood liberals.
let's be real. I spent 30 years at a New York City law firm. I made a bunch of money. That's why I've been able to do what I've been doing for the last 5 years, which is basically spending. I've been running a deficit the last few years, including giving $1 million to the fucking the Biden campaign and the Harris campaign and setting up my own PAC with $350,000 and basically foregoing employment opportunities.
Sure.
The price of eggs, and I don't mean this to be snotty, is like I couldn't tell you how much an egg costs. Okay? None of this. I'm going to get a tax cut. All I do is I own mutual funds and they throw off capital gains and my taxes are going down. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if I were purely self-serving,
I'd shut my mouth.
I could have been a federal judge. I could have shut my mouth. Okay. Sure. I could have, you know, my ex-wife tells me I could have been on the Supreme Court if I didn't fucking open my mouth. And, Trump is personally good for me. He's bad for the country. He's bad for my children because I want my children to live in a functioning, stable,
absolutely
democratic country that is not run by repressive autocrats. But, you know, the people who are going to suffer are the people who were conned into voting for this piece of shit.
No question.
You know, I don't know whether we will ever be able to convince a majority of them that they have been conned, because people absolutely do not like to be told that they were conned, and they will go, you know, and that's part of what draws people to Trump. And that's part of the reason why they ensconce themselves in, a media bubble of lies
and OAN and all
propaganda.
That.
Exactly. But that's going to be the way to win over, I think, the middle of the country. And then, you know, if things get sufficiently bad, we may learn the lesson that other societies like Poland and Germany and countries that have been really ruined by autocratic regimes or suffered by autocratic regimes. I was thinking of one other example recently. Oh, South Korea, right? South Korea, they get it. Because
they got it.
They suffered military rule, and that's the reason why. I mean, that was just so impressive. This guy declares martial law at 10 o'clock, and people are protesting
in the streets at 10:05
at midnight.
Yeah,
the dumbass shouldn't have told everybody that's what he was doing. He should have taken the internet down and done. You know, he didn't do it right.
Let's not give him any hints.
I think he's done now.
Oh, he's done. He's done. But I mean, I was reading the other day. I started reading a book about Mobutu Sese Seko in Zaire, and it reminded me so much more of Trump than the German guy or even Putin, because it was all so low grade. It was all so like, no, I want that guy's Mercedes. I want that guy's villa. I want.
Oh, yeah.
And as Mobutu got like older and more deranged and more crazy, it really struck me like how much it became just a low grade racket. I mean, here's the thing:
you're absolutely right. I mean, I recommend to viewers a book that came out in 2020 by Ruth Ben-Ghiat called Strong Men.
Oh, yes. And terrific.
Like, and it's the point I'm making is the same point you're just making. I made it the other day on television. It's like, we're not really going to see, at least in the first instance, jackbooted thugs in the streets. Okay. A la the fall of the Weimar Republic. We're going to see some abuses of police power. There's no question about that. But what we're going to see is the corruption and the absolute just grabbiness, the low grade, as you say, grabbiness. You know, and Burles, you know, one of the people that Ruth profiles in her book, or one of the strongmen, is Berlusconi. Berlusconi was a good example of that. And then Gaddafi. I mean, Gaddafi spent his time, appropriating women. To hang out in his tent with him and perform various acts. This is what they do. It's all about self-gratification. And then they attract others around them who are similarly
corrupt.
Motivated.
Yeah.
And as long as you don't interfere with the boss's grift too much, you're gonna survive. I mean, for example, I haven't seen the announcement that Boris Epstein has been terminated as an advisor to the president. I mean, the president-elect, for example.
Right.
After what he did.
Right.
And
folks,
then,
if you haven't followed it, Boris was literally trying to sell appointments.
Yeah, basically, it's like, give me $100,000. You want to go see Trump and want me to push him for you for X position that you want? I mean, I think he was holding up Rick Grinnell. No, who was he holding up? The guy who ultimately got Treasury.
No. Yeah.
The guy who got Treasury. The Soros guy who got Treasury. He was trying to hold him up for $100,000, and then threatened him.
Yep.
It was extortion. Okay, that fits. I'm pretty sure you could have made an extortion case out of that.
If you had a Justice Department that was going to do that kind of thing.
Right. Well, hopefully Merrick Garland right now is busy writing his report.
Anyway. Right. Well, George Conway, I want to thank you, as always, my friend, for coming on the podcast. You are, as always. Yes, let us absolutely do this more. I appreciate you, and we will talk again very soon. And if I don't talk to you before then, have a very, very Merry Christmas.
Same to you.
The Lincoln Project Podcast is a Lincoln Project production. Executive produced by Whitney Hayes, Ben Howe, and Joseph Werner-Cheney. Produced and edited by Whitney Hayes and Jeff Paylor.
And good luck.
Hey, everybody. If you would like to get in touch, if you have suggestions for a guest or a show topic, or just general questions, our email is podcast@lincolnproject.us. That's podcast@lincolnproject.us.